and then it will just, it'll cycle through and come up.
Well, while it's loading, you're not going to be able to see any of my pictures. Oh, well, that's okay. It's a group of nurses kind of waving their fists and with signs and showing their dissatisfaction. I'll describe all my pictures for you. As mentioned, I'm not a nurse. My background is more labor relations and education, post-secondary education, so adult education. But I have done applied researches and worked with nurses quite a bit. And reason I was invited, I think, today was I did, along with some of my colleagues, some work, a report for AFSCME in 2003 on the nursing shortage, and then also more recently in 2007 on looking at the possibility, looking at LPNs, and how do LPNs fit in specifically with this, and we made the recommendation that LPNs should be utilized more in acute care settings. Okay, so let's see here. But just, this is about staffing, and I struggled with how much to talk about all the stuff I think everyone knows, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. This is from a fact sheet that the American Association of Colleges put out. If you want to look for it, it's pretty good, gives a good summary. But basically, you know, if you look at what the recent research is, it's pretty much the same bad news we've had for the last 7 years or so. And really, what nurses, even before it was acknowledged as a problem by academics, what nurses have known for a long time, there's a shortage of nurses. Right now, they're expecting to have 500,000 less nurses than they need by 2025. And although there's been some increase in the enrollment in the study I was looking at, or their study was four-year programs, about 5%, 5.5%. It needs to really be expanded by about 30%. So that's about 1 million new nurses needed by 2016. And there's a vacancy rate in 2007 for RNs of 8.1%. And as we know, there's a problem even getting into programs. They turned away in 2007, 2008, about 40,000 qualified applicants. And probably even more important, first-year nurses who leave within a year, about 27%. And interestingly enough, I was looking at a 2005 study that of these nurses who get in, only 61% plan to work in a hospital. And a quarter of nursing students at the study they did in 2005 wanted to just go straight through to grad school, okay, and assuming some sort of nursing that's not going to be at the bedside. Okay, so the important question, and this is really was kind of the thesis of our 2003 report, was, is there really a shortage of nurses? Or is there a shortage of nurses willing to work in the profession? Because when you look at the amount of people who have a license who aren't working in nursing, at least at that time, it almost matched up. And so it just seemed like a lot of the attention was focused, on increasing the pipeline rather than keeping the nurses working in the profession. And I just want to say one thing, and this is, I've learned this from doing the study on the LPNs, is when I say nurse, I mean LPN and RN. If I say RN, I mean RN. But I've noticed that a lot of studies just say nurse when what they really mean is RN. Okay. Okay. So, the other thing, did I go backwards? No? Yeah, okay, I did go backwards. Sorry. You know, so this is also, you're talking, you know, your short-term supply, your existing supply of nurses, and it also impacts the long-term supply of nurses. I remember I just said about new nurses not staying. Okay, you also have the effect of if your existing supply of nurses discourage people from becoming nurses, that's also problematic. And that happens. Okay. So, I mean, what are some of the problems? Clearly, you know, we all know the working conditions, but more patients per nurse, increased duties, sicker patients, rapid patient turnover, unsafe working environment, less support both from, you know, people who would be auxiliary to the nurse, but also people who, like a, you know, a charge nurse or somebody higher up, a nurse specialist who could help out in really critical situations. So you have less of that. And the result is increased stress and burnout. And I just want to, like, go off on a tiny little tangent here and just say one of the things when I was looking kind of at new research and what's out there, there's this whole body of literature on the topic of lateral hostility, you know, the bullying. But it's really interesting how sometimes there's a connection made to these working conditions, but a lot of other times it's sort of portrayed as intrinsic to nursing. And oppressed group theory, so that, you know, nurses just do this. They eat their young, you know, and as opposed to, and this happens, I do a lot of health and safety stuff, and this happens with a lot of health and safety subjects where it's like, you don't look at the root causes of why perhaps might these people be a little grumpy, you know? And it also, anyway, it's just sort of the side thing. If you try it sometime and, you know, go to Google Scholar and do lateral hostility and see how much comes up on nursing, it's a lot. It's very popular. So, you know, and also I want to just say the other thing is employers created this shortage, okay? They created it. They did the cuts in the first place that made nurses short and, you know, the shorter patient stays. This just didn't appear out of the air, okay? Okay, so strategies that work. Well, they have to address the problems that make nurses leave. I mean, that seems obvious, but, you know, there was a 2003 survey of nurses considering leaving the profession, and I think AFT did it, I'm not sure. But, you know, 87% wanted better staffing ratios, okay? 79% wanted input in decisions. So, you know, that's one of the things that needs to happen to prevent nurses from leaving. And staff needs to be added at all levels, and I'm going to talk about that more when I talk about including the LPN. But the other thing is give staff a real voice. You know, I think you see to a certain extent that happening with some of the magnet programs. And, you know, in the first report we did, we were really high on magnet programs. I thought, oh, this is a great idea. But as time went on, I thought to myself, well, couldn't you just achieve the same thing by having a union there? You know, wouldn't the nurses have a voice? And in fact, in terms of non-RNs, magnets programs have been not so great. If you're an LPN, a lot of times magnet programs are perceived as actually encouraging because they encourage having a higher skill match, which is a good thing in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you know, you want as many competent bedside caregivers as you can get. And so I actually have gone from being pro-magnet to being much more just pro-union. Okay. So the picture here, which you can't see, is of a leaky bucket. And going through some of the practices that seem to work some but not be very effective, one of them is this whole idea of the pipeline, increasing the pipeline, and a lot of money and a lot of you know, like in Oregon, we have a nursing center, and it's just about completely focused on increasing the pipeline. Well, you know, if you have a leaky bucket and you keep filling it up, and you're going to wonder, you know, why it never fills. And that's pretty much what this strategy is like. So it's good that there's an increase of RN programs and that they're trying to increase RN faculty. I was even reading in one article how they thought, you know, they were talking about, well, these nurses that just never, you know, work at the bedside, they just go on and get their graduate degree. Let's have them be instructors. It's like, well, doesn't clinical experience count for anything? But anyway, more scholarship, recruit more candidates, public image campaign. All of this is okay, but the fact of the matter is, if you have 21% of new nurses leaving or not going into hospital nursing, you have a real problem. You know, retaining the nurses is what you need to be thinking about. For new nurses, and I'm going to talk about this just a little bit, just because I think it's important. There has been some strategies of, you know, none of this seems like a really rocket science, but pay the nurses who mentor them more. Give them a lighter load. Have better orientation for them. Getting input from staff nurses about what is it that makes it difficult for them to include the new nurses or student nurses in their, be helpful to them. Naturally, you know, any kind of hazing of new nurses is bad, but, you know, some of the research I saw on lateral hostility, a great deal of it was directed to about how you deal with the new nurse situation. And I think that, once again, it gets back down to staffing. And if a new nurse coming in isn't perceived as more work for the nurse, perhaps there will be less problems there. One book I was reading actually gave the new nurses like cards of what to say when the nurse wasn't nice to them. And, you know, I mean, that may be a little bit helpful, but it just seems like it's more of a structural problem. Okay. So, just talking about sort of practices that I don't think are very good practices. One of them is getting back like this whole lateral hostility thing. That seems to be the new thing where they're going to mandate civility in hospitals between nurses rather than look at the underlying solutions through zero tolerance programs. I don't think that's really going to work. And in fact, I think through a lot of the reading I did, it looked like it silenced, like hostility was equated with negativity, or so people, nurses who raised issues, kind of were accused of being negative. And in fact, what we need is to increase the amount of voice that nurses have and raising issues. Other strategies, you know, if you go in, for example, if you're an RN union and go in and bargain for more, you know, guarantees of RN staffing, that's great. But if they then cut the person that answers the phone for you or, you know, the person who transports the patient, you know, then you really have not solved the issue, okay? You really can't just have, unless you have enough RNs to do all of those jobs too. So that's another problem. You know, another unproductive strategy, which I didn't put on the slide, is the entire discussion about what, you know, whether somebody is a two-year nurse or four-year nurse or, you know, the whole education level thing. I think it's divisive and, you know, clearly more research is needed on appropriate skill mix, but it's, you know, When I read the research about, right when I was starting the LPN research, the research came out that said, you know, about the error rate of non-four-year nurses and all of that. Well, okay, I find it hard to believe they could hold everything steady in that to make that determination. But okay, let's say even they did. The problem with it is, you know, even if you say, okay, everybody should be a four-year RN, where are you going to get them? I guess you're going to get them from the foreign-born population, which is fine, unless you're a foreign country that really wants to keep their nurses. So, I mean, it's just a very hard thing, and it's extremely hard on the LPNs. So I'm going to wrap up with my practical ideas. So I actually think that if we're looking for more RNs, LPNs, or health professionals, some of the grow-your-own programs where hospitals work in partnerships with some of the educational institutions to make it possible for people who already work there to move up and have career ladders. You know, for some reason, this is really hard to do. You know, but where it's been done, they've had very loyal employees, and they actually are able to recruit more easily. So if you can come in as a CNA, become an LPN, and even perhaps become an RN. And, you know, that can happen a variety of different ways, but the best way is to have support both in terms of the financial burden and also time off. Where appropriate, bring back LPNs into acute care, you know, and I think that the way you do that works is you work with your current nursing staff to see where it might work, and you make sure everybody knows what the scope of practice is for the LPN in your state is, because it differs from state to state, and you figure out where it makes sense, include the LPNs in the discussions. You pay the LPNs who work at the high end of their scope, come in and work at the highest end of the scope, more. And, you know, it's kind of this idea of everyone works at the higher end of their scope that wants to. And, you know, it works well with those grow-your-own programs because, you know, that LPN that's working at the high end of their scope, maybe then that they would be willing to become an RN. And, of course, you know, more pay for more duties. And then I'm just going to end with a quote from Dr. Margaret McClure. Just, you know, nursing needs people with different skill sets and talents, whether it's an aptitude for technology or interpersonal communications. Everyone can find a place to thrive and be happy in this useful, in this broad and challenging field. And I do think that. And if, you know, maybe it means going back to more of a team nursing approach and making changes about how we educate nurses. But I think it's something that needs to be done just in terms of short-term supply and long-term supply. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Helen. Next, we have Dr. Lynn Unruh, who is an associate professor in the Department of Health Management and Informatics at the University of Central Florida. She received a BS in nursing from the University of Illinois and a PhD in economics from the University of Notre Dame. She has done extensive research in nurse staffing in hospitals and nursing homes and in measuring and forecasting supply and demand of the nursing workforce. She is currently conducting a study of the work environment of newly licensed RNs. She has received funding from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the Florida Center for Nursing, the National Institute of Nursing Research, the National Science Foundation, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Please welcome Dr. Unruh.